Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the July 26 edition of Commodity Week. Is the heavy lifting over? Has the cash market crashed for good? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Matt Bennett from TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing from Morton, Illinois, and Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's start our discussion today with this question. In the cash market, we had a really big crash in both the corn and then the soybeans this week. Corn came a bit later than soybeans. Will it come back? Has the heavy lifting been done? Is the job over? We'll start with you, Sherm Newland.
Well, this has definitely been a week the farmers would like to forget, the way the basis fell out of bed. And the way it happened, it's hard to say whether to come back. I'm going to say probably not, but we'll have to wait a few weeks to see and watch it, basically. And if the meal market would start to come back, then we might get a little bit of life back into the beans. But it's acting like it's probably about over.
Chip Nellinger?
I think the heavy lifting has been done. But I think it will come back some. Interesting thing, just a couple hours ago, I talked to a fairly good-sized cattle producer, and they actually buy corn. And they called up their local elevator and said, hey, this is great news. The basis just fell out of bed. I'm ready to buy corn. They said, well, we don't have any to sell you. So that tells me that despite the basis getting beat up this week, there's still not much out there for sale, and I don't think elevators have bought much.
Yeah, I almost really want to ask, but I'm not going to. Matt Bennett.
I'd kind of like to agree with what Chip said. Just based upon some of the processors that we deal with, both on corn and beans, all needs are not met to get us in a new crop. Now, if there's, corn or beans that's going to be coming up the river or moving north, that remains to be seen on what the cost factor is and if that's going to be cost effective. But bottom line to me is that definitely we overdid this thing probably just a little bit. I mean, we lost $2.40 on our flat cash price of beans in 48 hours, and that was a shock to people. I think it's going to have to come back a little bit. It remains to be seen. But when you're looking at such a big inverse, this is all part of the process, and it's kind of tough to go back the other way. But I think what you're going to see is probably some people are going to really be needing either corn and beans or they're going to look for a quick ship bid. Hey, if you can have it here by the end of the week, we'll give you a real hot basis.
So it's really about at what level is the basis coming from, even if it does the heavy lifting. It might be from a lower futures level?
I think a combination of both, actually. And I agree with Matt. I think it's geographic in nature, too. So, some of these areas that are deficit in the Eastern Corn Belt because of two or three poor crops in a row, there still is going to be some pushes between now and new crop as those processors scramble to get their final bushels before new crop supplies.
September corn, by the way, this week had a high of $5.45. The low was at $4.90. It made a new life of contract low this week. And the settlement price just 2 cents above that at $4.92. It was down 52 cents from the previous week. December corn at $4.76 was down 24. It's not even close to its all-time low, by the way. That's down at $3.98 1/4. I don't think we're going to see that anytime soon, do you?
Not anytime soon, no. I mean, if the weather looks good for the next couple of weeks, that's for sure. If August weather continues to look good, and so does September, and we can finish the corn crop off in a good manner, and the yield would continue to maybe to climb. I mean, USDA is at 156. If we'd get pushing to 160 or even a little bit higher than that nationally, then you could see I don't know, it's hard to say for sure, but low $4, the end of the threes is a possible, but it won't be anytime soon.
Is there good corn and bad corn in the field? And I know there is, but I mean in larger portions this year than maybe we're expecting here from the eastern Corn Belt. Iowa seems to be griping an awful lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whenever you get in our neck of the woods, obviously we're sitting in pretty good position, but you still not only see some tough areas, but when you get in the area, you see fields that, you know, look like a roller coaster. I mean, there's bare spots, there's real short corn, there's good-looking corn. From the roadside, 9 times out of 10, it looks awfully good. But bottom line is, you know, there's a lot of guys that's been coming in saying, man, I wish I had a full stand to get all this benefit from all this rain that I would give anything to get, you know, in a lot of Julys.
Well, it's not only the stand. I mean, the stand has been pretty good, but I think there's been a lot of nitrogen leaching. I mean, we've lost a lot of fertilizer from that rain because, like you said, we got uneven fields, and if you didn't come back in and reapply, like, you know, a lot of us did, if we could, one way or the other, I think that's going to end up hurting in spots in the field.
Nonetheless, there are a whole lot of acres of corn in the United States, right?
On paper.
On paper. What's not there?
No, I think we'll see some adjustments down the road, both from acres that switched out of beans to corn and prevent plant. I think there's just no question they have to adjust those eventually. So harvested acreage on corn is going to come down, in my opinion. Does it have to come down 5 million acres? No, but a little bit.
It's already off from what many would expect, right? I mean, it's lower than usual.
The harvested percentage is.
USDA's numbers,
yes.
Right.
Yes. I think they've got more to come. It's just we'll see how it pans out.
The farmers would agree, but NAS probably, they like their numbers. They love their math, and they once they get set, it's hard to get them to budge.
Well, Joe Persaki's probably happy this week, right? He looks right this week. Is that NAS?
Yeah.
USDA, World Agricultural Outlook Board,
but when
Jerry Norton and company, all those guys.
When are you going to get the numbers changed? October? I mean, we could drop a lot between now and then.
Well, October would be when the FSA numbers get built into the system.
I don't think you're going to know anything until October whenever it comes to not only a real number, in my opinion, for planted acres plus harvested acres. I think the percentage is definitely lower, as Chip's talking about, but it's lower of a lower number, in my opinion. I don't think we're talking an enormous number, but I think we're going to be taking, in my opinion, a good 3 million acres off.
I think a wild card, too, is this bean resurvey coming out on the 12th, because even though it doesn't have anything to do with corn, and I don't know, maybe they don't change it or marginally change it, but if it's a big number that we increase bean acres, I think the corn market looks at that and says and assumes every acre that's picked up on beans came out of corn. So that could start it, and that's a wild card, in my opinion, for this upcoming August crop report on the 12th.
So the question really is, and the market's always right, so $4.76 corn for December on Friday is correct. How long is it correct for? And I know you could say until they start trading on Sunday night.
Well, like you said, the market is always correct. We'll see. I think if you see what the weather looks like next week, and we could see some bounces. I see some technical bounces, maybe getting back up to some moving averages into the 495, maybe stretch to the 504 area, which is the 20-day moving average on the December contract. But much more than that, I don't know if we're going to get it right now. And I continue to think we'll probably continue to leak lower.
I would agree with Sher. I think we're short-term way oversold and due for a bounce. The bounce might be 15 cents, though. Unless we see big changes on acreage like we're talking about on this August crop report or the October report, bounces will be sold, and we're destined to have probably a lower low.
I would agree with that. And, you know, whenever I look at this from a weather perspective, I mean, you couldn't ask for better pollination weather basically throughout the entire Corn Belt. And I don't know when the last time we had this was, but this year's reminded me a lot of 09. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in 09 we said, you know, we need a perfect growing season after the really, really wet spring. And that's exactly what we got. But we also got some nice treats in the fall, too, with a ton of drying costs and, you know, a big worry about early frost, which I think is going to be talked about from here on out. But, yeah, in the short run, I mean, I think we should get a little bit of bounce in here somewhere because the RSI is under 30. I mean, it's just extremely oversold right now.
Okay, as we went through the month of July last year, we were looking at very high prices, or we were looking at prices and thinking this is going to dump. And we started protecting crop insurance at that time. Almost everybody did. It was a risk management tool. Is there a risk management tool that farmers should consider this year for their crop insurance?
Yes. I mean, we just talked about this the other day in the office, and this is what we're going to try and do if the market would continue to drop to that, like Matt said earlier, the 420 level or even lower. If you're looking at a good yield, you know, you want to protect that crop insurance price because you could collect some insurance money there. So we're looking at buying some corn calls at a low $4, wherever we think we can figure out the harvest low is at, but in that 420 area.
Last year was easier because almost everybody knew they were going to be under their APH. It's harder this year because the higher you are above your APH, the lower that number is before crop insurance kicks in. So I agree, there's ways to do that. It's case by case, individual by individual circumstance, though.
But there's money on the table nonetheless.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about it. If you just do the math, for instance, like 185 APH, you look at taking this corn market down to that 4-420 level, and you could be harvesting 230 bushel corn, and anything under that, you're going to be collecting insurance on. So I kind of agree with what Sherman's saying. Once we get down into this level where we're, you know, maybe even $1.50 under the spring price, I think it's time to start looking at it as an opportunity to maybe protect some value that you've already, in essence, earned, you know, just simply by purchasing the insurance.
August soybeans this week had a high of $15.26 and a quarter. Its low was $13.30 and a half. Settlement price there at 13.49 and three quarters, off $1.41. It put in the month of July, an outside year. Not an outside month, but an outside year. Of course, that's old crop. November did not, $12.28 and a half, down 45 and a half. And I suppose we won't know if it's an outside year down or up, but it's an outside year nonetheless. Soybeans had a wicked bad week.
Yeah, the basis drop was unprecedented. I mean, I talked to one of the elevator guys that I work with, and he's like, he's never seen anything like that. And especially to do it all in 1 week, I mean, it's you got to feel like it's got to come back some, because did they magically find all these beans? I mean, there were some stories out that China was letting go 3 million metric tons out of the reserve. There was stories that we were importing beans from Brazil, and all that, I think, in combination with the good weather, you know, sent us down. I think it was a lot farther than we needed to go in the old beans, but I mean, the commercials said they've got enough bought up. So does that mean there was more old crop beans out there? Did USDA miss that number? Or farmers have more on hand? It's a game of poker sometimes.
Okay, so one other thing I want to know about liquidity in the nearby contract, the old contract. Lack of fund activity. Is liquidity caused volatility? How much of this was involved with this? How much of it was cash basis, do you think?
Yeah, I think it was a combination. I think the fund issue was for sure part of it because we're coming into first notice day. The funds, I think, overstayed their welcome. They've been long beans for a long time. They still had a pretty large long position built up in that front month August contract, and they had to start whittling that down. So in combination with the China news and rumors about us importing beans and the cash basis break, the funds just exaggerated as they were into liquidation mode anyway, at least out of that contract month, the August.
Yeah, it was basically you come in here on Tuesday and you get the news from China, you know, and then the basis level drops 30 to 50 cents depending on where you're at. And I think it just throws a red flag up for everybody, and it's just sell orders all over the place. And it just flowered. I mean, our basis, you know, discussion was changing on the hour, depending on who we were talking to and what processor, and everybody was somewhat in panic mode this week. But, you know, to lose $1.40 off the futures in a dollar basis, that's a pretty tough week.
Good values for end users to book or not?
Well, I think that a person has to start looking at them. I know that some of the livestock producers have been talking about stepping in and booking some of this, but I don't think they're going to get a whole lot aggressive in a situation where we're in July and we have excellent weather ahead of us. I think that there's probably not the need to get overly aggressive, but I certainly would be starting.
Oh, I think so. They've been waiting for a long time. And, you know, the issue, though, is at this point in old crop, you know, is there much more to book? There may be some, and probably people are taking advantage of that from an end-user standpoint. But the reality is everybody's waiting for that cheaper new crop. And, mm-hmm. and the idea that the weather's been good and there's a big supply coming may keep them sitting on their hands for a little while.
Well, there's the other question. Is there a big supply of soybeans that's coming or not? It's kind of a late crop, isn't it?
It's very late, and especially in certain areas, northern areas. I mean, even where I'm from, south of Route 70, some of the beans are very, very late. The double crop beans, some of them just finished planting a few days ago, and some of the double crop beans did not get in, and then some of the first-time beans just got planted. I mean, it's just highly variable. So it is a very late crop. I think if you have good weather through August, good for growing, and you get the rain, and then it extends into September, and then you keep what everybody's starting to talk about now, that early frost away, then maybe the bean crop could actually finish with a bang and be closer to the 40. I think 44 is still a little high, but maybe that 43 area on national average.
You are listening to Commodity Week. A couple of other numbers. August live cattle were down 17.5 at 121.80. Feeders at 152.60 finished 35 higher, and lean hogs at 97.75 were up $1.30. When we come back, we'll talk with Jerry Gulke of Gulke Group out of Chicago. Our panelists in studio include Matt Bennett, Chip Nellinger, and Sherm Newland. I'm Todd Gleason.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. We finished this week 1 degree below average across the state. Rainfall ranged from less than an inch in northern and western Illinois to over 2 inches in the southeast. There were some long-term concerns with dry weather in western and northern Illinois at this time. These areas are running about 5 to 50% of average for the month so far. For example, Quincy has received just 1/4 of an inch for July. This is at the time of year when the demand for water by crops is at its highest level and can run up to 1/4 of an inch per day. In fact, the U.S. Drought Monitor has put western Illinois in the category of abnormally dry. According to the National Weather Service, the mild temperatures should continue over the next week. Highs on Saturday will range from the low 70s in northern Illinois to the upper 70s in southern Illinois. Overnight lows will be in the 50s across the state. On Sunday, highs will be in the mid to upper 70s and lows in the mid to upper 50s. Slightly warmer conditions appear on Monday, with highs on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in the range of the mid to upper 70s across central and northern Illinois, and into the low 80s across southern Illinois. The next chance for rain is on Tuesday. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This is the July 26th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio include Chip Nellinger, Sherm Newland, and Matt Bennett. On the phone line, Jerry Gulke from the Gulke Group. He's normally in Chicago, but he's been making his way across the state of Iowa. Jerry, I'm told that you're doing that because producers from that state didn't like what Chicago was doing to the marketplace. Is that right?
Yeah, that's kind of the age-old thing. Chicago's crooked, and it just doesn't reflect the true price that I need to make a living farming. When you tell somebody that the world doesn't care about your backyard, it doesn't set well. So I had to come here myself and take a look.
And what did you find?
Well, we drove from Des Moines, Iowa north, and actually the crops north of Des Moines were much worse than I thought they would be. From what I had heard, it's all in the northern part of the state. But a lot of short beans, as some of the folks talked about earlier, why the beans are the problem, I think, in Iowa, and there's just a lot of short beans that were, I don't know, not ankle high. I don't think I saw any tall beans, knee high, which I would call tall. They're a lot taller than that in northern Illinois, but there weren't any knee high beans all the way from Des Moines north to Fort Dodge and then east to Mason City, a little bit east of Mason City and then back to Spencer, Iowa. And they're just the story, I think, in Iowa is the bean crop being short, and the corn crop, a lot of short corn as well, a lot of corn not pollinated yet. And I don't know what I've got to sit down tonight and kind of take a look at things, what numbers we're looking at. But certainly we probably have we'll have less harvested acres in Iowa. And because I don't know if some of that will reach maturity, the beans will produce something. But I guess, you know, I could see probably a 10% drop at least in soybean yield from normal in Iowa, and probably maybe a 20 bushel drop in corn. I've got to go look at some of the other areas, and maybe more than that. But at 14 million acres of intended acres in Iowa, even, you know, 20 bushels is only 280 million, and that's where you get to the point where when you're talking a 1.8 billion carryover or 2 billion, it doesn't matter what's going on in Iowa. It's kind of too late. We can't get there from here in corn. I think it's going to take a long time to get our demand back.
Jerry, knowing what you know, looking through Iowa, I mean, what do you think about some of the other northern states, South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, and then how does that relate to maybe what the USDA's number is on the 156 average yield? Do you think they're wrong, high, low?
Well, I drove from Sioux Falls about 3 weeks ago through South Dakota, and then into North Dakota, to Jamestown, northwest to Carrington, then to Minot, where my daughter farms. And I saw no bad corn, really, in South Dakota at all. I know there's some in the southeast corner, but it's a small area. Good-looking green color. South Dakota's probably, if you look at the good to excellent, it's probably one of the top-rated states. North Dakota had good corn, and it looks to me like going across the top of North Dakota, they got corn planted. It's similar to what, you know, Iowa. It looks like farmers wanted to plant corn a lot longer than what the Mother Nature let us do. And once we ran out of weather, then we stopped, and then there was a big lag between that and then going into soybeans. And so there's short soybeans in North Dakota. But I think going across those states, those counties of North Dakota, my conclusion was that the prevent planting in North Dakota was grossly overstated, unless I was prepared for a year like 2000 or like 2011. So, again, the frost will be the situation there, but I just didn't come away with much bullish feeling out of anything in doing the tours.
Jerry, I'd be interested in your thoughts on maybe if you saw much prevent plant, if you had an estimate there, or these bean acreage switches that you might have seen.
Yeah, I think in Iowa we took, or the farmers to prevent plant on any unplanted corn. You got to remember up here there's a lot of corn on corn, so beans is probably a second nature. And so when it ran out of time and they went to prevent planting because you know the APHs are pretty high, and then we went in and they went in and probably planted beans. I don't know if there was many transferred over corn to beans or not there, but you could see an increase in bean acres. There's a lot of beans planted that are very short. They had to do it for some reason then. And in North Dakota, you know, you got to remember that if you look at the USDA's crop report on the June 28th, they already said that, and if you haven't read it, take a good look at it, because there's 2.2 million acres of all crop, all land planted to all crops in North Dakota that they had stated that was not going to get planted. So already, if you're in North Dakota, you're past, in first part of June, you're past May 25th date. You knew that you probably weren't going to plant corn, maybe you would plant beans, but there was 2.2 million acres there and 400,000 in Minnesota that was not going to be planted compared to last year. So there's 2.6 million acres already that the farmers in both those states admitted to the fact time ran out. So we've already discounted quite a bit of that, and then the government dropped USDA and then took NAS numbers and said we're going to harvest 400,000 acres less. So you've got almost 2.6 almost 3 million acres already that's either not planted or not going to get harvested, a combination. I think the government's pretty close. We're, like someone mentioned earlier, we're not really going to know until October, and it may be too late by then because, you know, there's just too many acres, too many bushels, and the big key in my mind is we lost demand so significantly that in a time that we increased production globally, I think 3 billion bushels more corn, and there's enough beans in South America that if we have a shortfall here in the U.S., they'll make up the difference. So we have some problems that we haven't been used to. Been around longer than 13 years, you have a hard time finding that any analog year that tells you you're going to come out of this anytime soon.
Jerry, I know you're having a hard time painting a bullish picture on corn based upon what you've seen, just talking to you about the little tour that you've taken. But, you know, and we talked a little bit before the show, you know, it's a pretty well-known fact that the farmer hasn't sold a lot of new crop corn. You were talking about it, and we were talking about it. So what would your recommendation be to some of these guys that maybe feel as though maybe they missed a boat? What would your recommendation be for those guys, especially, you know, looking at good production? I mean, do they start selling some more now, or do they wait for better days, or what are you looking at?
Well, you know, it's a tough call. Put the person behind, because I've been pushing on DTN and the ag shows and so forth that we topped out last September of 2012. And I think really the best thing that a farmer can do is get educated, learn something from this. This isn't all about Iowa or all about Illinois. It's a global situation. And, you know, that's the tough part, is to say, you know, I looked at it quite a while ago and said, what do we really need? And we really didn't need a crop any bigger than we had last year. Anything more assumes that you're going to buy back demand, and that's not going to be $6 or $7. We proved that. So at what level, and the government is telling us, you know, they don't always lie. They're telling us we can increase demand by 1.8 billion bushels this year over next, or this next year over this last year we're coming out of, if corn averages 430, not if corn averages 530 or 630 or 7. And I think the big problem that we've got to look at is maybe in the future. We've got crop insurance now, but what if next year, you know, and you go back to 2008 and 9 when we came off of that top, we've spent a lot of time trying to get our way out of 450 and $5. So next year we'd be looking at a dollar less in crop insurance. That's when the push, the pedal meets the metal, so they say. And that's when we could probably see ag economy suffer the worst, in that we won't have the opportunity to say, I wish I could have sold, or wish I would have sold $6 corn and $13 beans. That opportunity may have to wait a couple of years before that comes back, and at the back of somebody else's drought problem.
And so a quick question for you, looking at insurance implications, does a guy hedge these 14 corn?
Yeah, I think so. Take a long look at the long-term charts, and I found it interesting that September corn, when it was became the lead contract, kind of gapped at that 550 level. I think, again, I look at what the other guy going to do, and if you look out far enough, I think 550 corn buys a lot of acres. I can make money doing that. A lot of farmers can, and certainly you're not going to shut off Brazil, Argentina, Ukraine, the rest of them, now that they're in the mode to plant. I don't think you shut off corn at 550. I like the flexibility, because I can get out of the position if I'm wrong or the market changes. But I think you've got to look at 14, and I don't know about 15, but 14 corn, what are you going to do with all the acres next spring if we have this kind of a surplus? And I don't think the market's going to give you a chance to get a February average of 550, let alone 565. It's probably going to be like 450 to 480 or something like that, and try to discourage acres into some other crop, not just here, but next fall. We got to send some kind of message to Brazil that don't plant any more corn, or switch to something else. Maybe they like cotton better than corn. And you can't put that flag in front of them and say, we'll give you $6 for all you can produce next year in South America.
Jerry, thank you so much.
You bet.
Jerry Gahlke is with the Gahlke Group. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. Time for a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Sherm Newland.
I know this week has looked pretty dismal, but the state, you know, focused, and there's still plenty of things to do with the market and try and look forward to, like we talked a while ago, about looking into next year, making some sales.
Sherman is with Risk Management Commodities. He's in Hudsonville, Illinois. Chip Nellinger is with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois.
Yeah, I would agree totally with that. Don't panic here. Don't stick your head in the sand and do nothing. There's carry back in the market. There's basis opportunities. There's going to be pricing opportunities as well.
And Matt Bennett with TGM out of Windsor.
I agree with what both these guys said, and I think most people feel fairly good about the crop that they have in the field, so I think we're going to have a good fall, and hopefully everyone have a really good income year.
That wraps up Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Because last year what we were looking at doing was we were trying to lock in that ratio to fertilizer price to new crop corn price, and we had an excellent ratio. Well, we may have a better ratio this year.
I think so,
with the hedge.
Fertilizer prices are going down, and if you sell now.
They've gone down
and
a lot the last couple weeks, haven't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And if you can sell now, and then like you just said, you're better ahead to do it now and then book your fertilizer
so
later.
So, Jerry, you don't think you want to do 15 yet?
Well, actually, we've done some. We've got a lot of clients that want to do that. They get with the bank and they give them their cash flows and say, you know, I can make money here, and the bank's willing to go with them. But that's a lot of, that's a long time out. I have, I guess I want to be 100% short on 14, you go to 15. But, you know, one thing I didn't mention that I probably should have, and we haven't had a need for it for quite a while, and because we got a good price at Harvest, but I built grain bins and kind of made a career writing for Top Producer on the benefits of acting like a small elevator and picking up the carry. We could pick up another 40 or 50 cents. You know, there's a number of ways to skin a cat. Once they get done harvesting, if you only sold, whatever you need to sell to make your expenses, but you can roll that hedge out to July. It takes some work, and you got to maintain grain quality, but you know, getting paid 40 cents a bushel on 100,000 bushels is pretty good money. Maybe it's a peanuts compared to what we've been making, but that may be where the profit lies.
You still end up with 5.25 easy enough, and if you have 200 bushel yield, you're good.
That's exactly.
We're gonna have to learn to make money the old-fashioned way, like we used to before we had these runaway markets, and that's not all bad. It's going to be a new experience for young kids, though.
I believe as well, too, if what Chip says is, you say you've got 200 bushel corn, I think there's an extremely good chance that you're going to collect insurance if you're an 85% CRC guy.
Yeah.
You know, I just think there's a really good chance because, like I said, right now with 185 bushel corn, APH, 85%, if we had the average right now, you'd collect at anything under 190. Mm-hmm. And I think we can all agree that we've probably got some weaker days ahead of us, especially going right into the glut of harvest.
Yeah, I think so. I think the guys that are paying this high cash rent are going to have to start pushing the pencil.
Oh, man.
Pretty hard, because it's going to get nasty.
That'll break the pencil and start.
It's going to get pretty bad.
Big changes coming.
Jerry, are you worried about drying costs like we had in 09?
Yeah, I was talking, I think, where was I? I think I was on WGN or an Ag and Orient show last week, and I mentioned the fact that, you know, I think in 2009 I paid 88 cents a bushel to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not worried. I've got I got my crop in by the 2nd of May, and I planted a little earlier maturing corn, and it was pollinating at the earliest I can remember. It's like about 10 days ago already, and I think we'll have that 22% moisture corn. But we also farm in North Dakota, and they remember very well the 2009, and they've got the same kind of thing where if the maturity is late. Goodness, you know, we were out into, that was the year that everybody complained about USDA's quarterly report, you know. We came up with $400 million, but we weren't done harvesting. We didn't really know what we had until February, March of the following year.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll make for an interesting conversation on egg talk shows, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We got a long road to hoe yet, I think.
Well, being cooler right now, you know, if we hold this cool weather pattern, it's got to get in some people's minds at some point that, you know, we're not building the GDDs that we need to. And it certainly is going to put us in a situation where, like I said, if some of this corn doesn't pollinate till the second week of August, you're looking at in October before your black layer. And that's getting pretty scary.
Yeah, and that's high moisture corn at black layer. You got to dry it down. It's pretty difficult.
Exactly. It's tough to dry it down in October.
I think there's talk out there about the early frost, but I don't know if the trade's really going to take it too serious till we get past Labor Day.
We got lucky in 09, let's just be honest about it.
Yeah.
Real lucky. And if we don't get lucky this year, a guy like Jerry that's got corn that's going to be, you know, he's not going to get affected by it. And we planted all of ours the 15th to the 20th of May. I think it's going to be fine. But we still plant some full season stuff, but it's all pollinated right now. We're all probably going to be smiling because if we do, price-wise, you're looking at adding a fair amount of money onto the board pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I like staying flexible. We're not heavily sold in cash, but we're heavily sold on paper with options and futures.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we've been recommending that for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have too.
You know.
I mean, I was wanting guys to cover all their fertilizer cost with corn sales last fall, and the guys that did it are just thrilled to death.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't we do more of that? Well, because you didn't want to do more of it, you know?
It's hard enough to get them to do that.
Yeah. I know. Well, I don't know. What's the national soybean yield going to be, Jerry?
I don't know. I was just looking at some information, and, you know, we've got a big increase in global stocks, because of South America and Argentina, so they can absorb some of our losses. I think we've got to get yield down to below 40 and a half in order to really get excited. It could take a while before the market realizes that we have global stocks that are, I think, significantly higher than last year, of course. And if we get a crop at all near that 43 range, we're going to have too much. And I've got a feeling that, you know, that the market is, you know, that soybeans are in for probably a hit, but it may take a while before us to realize that we need to develop, you know, realize the crop first. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we get down to that lower $10 level. And you've got South America, and, you know, they're in the export business well into our harvesting time because they've got the excess supplies. And we'll see what happens. That's a tough one. I you know, August is going to be very important, I think, in determining the yield here in Iowa for sure, and of course elsewhere. If we get dry, then, you know, we could drop this yield. But I think the world's got a cushion that says it's not that important about the United States having a perfect crop, and that's the unfortunate situation about growing too much and having South America breathe on our neck.
So you're selling 14 beans too?
Yes, as a matter of fact. The only thing I see in 14 is that there probably is going to be a push towards eating more pork and more chicken at the expense of beef. If these numbers and fundamentals in beef are right, you know, we should be at $140 by now, not $122, but maybe that's coming. If it is, I think the poultry guys increasing in production and the hogs, well, both of them eat more meal, and we may end up needing more acres, you know, closer to 79 million acres of corn, of beans. And I don't know if beans have to buy that demand or not, but that's the one area that I see coming down the road that could help us, and that the world may need more beans if they get used to eating, you know, increasing a demand like they have. So that's a wild card that's out there, but the trouble is we get too much and we got all these acres sitting there. They're not going to go away, and I don't know if you need to have a bidding war to get another 2 million acres of beans if you need it.
Yeah, corn may go cheap enough. They'll just... $10 beans may look good to $3 corn.
Mm. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. I think someone mentioned the rent thing, and that's got to come down. But I think it will. I rent some land yet, and the landlords have not been bashful about raising the rent 10 or 15% a year, compounded. So we'll have to go back and see whether we can get it reduced. But the problem is there's always another fool out there that wants to roll the dice, and he's willing to pay whatever you pay and then some. So we got a ways to educate him.
So when are we going to see it in land prices?
I will say that if rents come down, then we have a whole lot more problem than lower prices.
Do you think some of these guys are – I mean, we've got guys paying $550, $600. Do you think they're going to be able to pay that with $4 corn?
I don't see it. Well, I don't see how.
They got a different pencil than I do.
14, but
if they've hedged the crap out of it?
I think it's a 2-year lag.
They've hedged the crap out of it?
Yeah.
Well, no, I think they'll roll the dice because they got so much money now.
Yeah.
14, they'll take a bath. 15, they'll have to
sell their equipment. Either
give it up.
15, they'll have a new LLC.
Yeah. There'll be a sale, but they'll just have a lot of nice equipment to sell.
Well, it'll be interesting because I don't know if interest rates are going to go up in the, you know, in the other markets, you know, in the money markets and so forth. But if any of these guys that bought land because they can get a 3% return find out it's a 1.5% return, and you get a 3% on CDs or 5% on CDs or something down the road, then that's where they run for cover. But I had land in North Dakota I wanted to sell, but I got it, you know, Monsanto, they had a meeting in Fargo the other day. My daughter attended it, and Monsanto keeps coming up with these yields and lower maturing grains that we've got clients at Monsanto that tried corn for the first time. So we got problems out there with the technology that makes that cheaper land up north not so bad. At $3,000 or $4,000 up there, if that's what it has to bring, then that compares pretty well to $12,000 down in Illinois. So. I don't know where the equilibrium is, but I think I'd rather, if I could convert it all, I'd convert it over to something cheaper and get out of Illinois for now.
Mm-hmm. Illinois is not the best business state to be in, that's for sure.
Right. But as long as we're paying taxes,
we probably shouldn't open up that can of worms.
Well, we're going to go back out and see if we can find a good crop of corn, and I can get bearish again on Iowa.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I left the recorders running. Is that okay?
You bet.
Okay. Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Yep.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.